Hang with an orange slice. I know you know how good it feels to send money home. I could tell he was thinking about his mom and his six siblings. He had been the father figure at his home. I wondered whether that made him even more homesick than I was. He cleared his throat and went on. But there are other things that I wasn't expecting to like, too. I really enjoy the discipline of it and the routine. I like knowing that I'm doing something necessary. I feel so content. I've been restless for years counting stock or cleaning houses. Now I feel like I'm doing what I was meant to do.
So that's a big yes? You love it?
Completely.
But you don't like Maxon. And I know you don't like the way Ilya is run. We used to talk about it back home, and then that whole thing with the people in the South losing their castes. I know that bothers you, too.
He nodded. I think it's cruel.
Then how are you okay with protecting it? You fight against rebels to keep the king and Maxon safe. They're the ones who make everything happen, and you don't like any of what they do. So how do you love your job?
He chewed as he thought. I don't know. I guess it doesn't make sense, but... Okay, like I said, there's the sense of purpose, and feeling challenged and engaged, the ability to do something more with my life. Maybe Ilya isn't perfect, in fact it's far from it, but I have hope, he said simply. We were both quiet for a moment, while the word washed over us. I have this feeling that things have gotten better than they were, though I honestly don't know enough about our history to prove that. And I have this feeling that things will get even better in the future. I think that there are possibilities. And maybe this is silly, but it's my country. I get that it's broken, but that doesn't mean these anarchists can just come and take it. It's still mine. Does that sound crazy?
I nibbled my bread and reflected on Aspen's words. They took me back to our treehouse, and all the times I would ask him questions about things. Even if I disagreed, it helped me understand them better. But I didn't disagree on this point. In fact, it helped me see what was probably hiding in my heart all this time. It doesn't sound crazy at all. It sounds completely reasonable.
Does that help with whatever you've been thinking about?
It does.
Are you going to explain any of it?
I smiled up at him. Not yet. Though Aspen was smart and he might have already guessed. The wistful look in his eyes suggested that he probably had. He looked away for a moment, running his hand down my arm, finishing by playing with the button bracelet around my wrist.
We're a mess, aren't we?
A big one.
Sometimes I feel like we're not, too tangled to be taken apart.
I nodded. It's true. So much of me is tied up in you, I feel kind of lost without you. Aspen pulled me close, running a hand over my temple and down my cheek.
We'll just have to stay tangled then.
He kissed me gently, like if he pushed too hard, the moment might shatter, and we'd lose everything. Maybe he was right. Slowly he lowered me to the mattress of pillows, holding on to me, tracing curves as he kissed me on and on. It was all so familiar, so safe. I ran my fingers through Aspen's cropped hair, remembering the way it used to fall and tickle my face when he kissed me. I noted his arms around me, so much fuller than they used to be, so much sturdier. Even the way he held me had changed. There was a newfound confidence there, something instilled in him through becoming a two, becoming a soldier. Too soon it was time to leave, and Aspen walked me to the door. He gave me a lingering kiss, making me a little lightheaded.
I'll try to get another note to you soon, he promised.
I'll be waiting. I leaned into him, holding on to him for one long moment. Then, to keep us safe, I left. My maids prepped me for bed, and I went through it in a daze. It used to feel like the selection was one choice, Maxon or Aspen. And as if that was some decision my heart could make simply, it grew into so many more things. Was I a five or a three? When this was over, would I be a two or a one? Would I live out my days as an officer's wife or a king's? Would I slide quietly into the background in which I'd always been so comfortable, or force myself into the spotlight I'd always feared. Could I happily do either? Could I not hate whoever Maxon ended up with if I chose Aspen? Could I not hate whoever Aspen chose if I stayed with Maxon? As I got into my bed and turned out the light, I reminded myself that it was my decision to be here. Aspen may have asked, and my mother may have pushed, but no one forced me to fill out the form for the selection. Whatever was coming, I'd just face it. I'd have to. Chapter 23. I curtsied to the Queen as I walked into the dining room, but she didn't notice. I looked over to Elise, who was the only one already there, and she merely shrugged. I sat down as Natalie and Celeste entered and were equally ignored, and finally Chris arrived, sitting next to me but keeping her eyes on Queen Amberlee. The Queen seemed to be in her own world, staring at the floor or occasionally glancing at Maxon's and the King's chairs as if something was wrong. The butlers began serving food, and most of the girls started eating, but Chris kept watch on the head table. "Do you know what's going on?" I whispered. Chris sighed and turned to me. Elise called her family to get some insight into what was happening and to have her relatives meet Maxon and the King once they got to New Asia. But Elise's family says they never arrived.
They never came?
Chris nodded. The weird thing is, the King called when they landed, and he and Maxon both spoke with Queen Amberlee. They're fine, and they told her they were in New Asia. But Elise's family kept saying they never showed. I scrunched my forehead, trying to understand.
What does that all mean?
I don't know, she confessed. They say they're there, so how could they not be? It doesn't make sense.
Huh,
I said, not sure of what else to add. Why would Elise's family not know they were there? What if maybe they weren't actually in New Asia? Where could they be? Chris leaned closer to me. There's something else I wanted to talk to you about, she whispered. Can we go for a walk in the gardens after breakfast?
Of course,
I answered, eager to hear what she knew. We both ate quickly. I wasn't sure what she'd found out, but if she wanted to talk outside, there was clearly a need for secrecy. The Queen was so distracted she barely even noticed as we left. Stepping into the sunlit gardens felt wonderful. It's been a while since I've been out here, I said, closing my eyes and lifting my face to the sun. You usually come with Maxon, right?
Mm-hmm.
A second later, I wondered how she knew that. Was it common knowledge? I cleared my throat. So what did you want to talk about? She stopped under the shade of a tree and turned to face me. I think you and I should talk about Maxon.
What about him?
She fidgeted.
Well, I had prepared myself to lose. I think we all had, except for maybe Celeste. It was obvious, America. He wanted you. And then everything with Marley happened, and it changed.
I wasn't quite sure what to say.
So are you just telling me you're sorry for moving to the top or something?
No, she said emphatically. I can see he still cares about you. I'm not blind. I'm only saying, I think you and I might be neck and neck at this point. I like you. I think you're a really great person, and I don't want for things to get ugly, however it turns out.
So this is...
She clasped her hands in front of her, trying to think of the right words. This is me offering to be completely honest about my relationship with Maxon, and I'm hoping you'll do the same. I crossed my arms and went for the one question I'd been dying to ask. When did you two get so close? Her eyes got a little dreamy and she toyed with a piece of her light brown hair. I guess right after everything with Marley. It probably sounds stupid, but I made him a card. That's what I always did back home when my friends were sad. Anyway, he loved it. He said no one had given him a present yet.
What?
Oh, wow. After everything he'd done for me, had I really never done anything for him in return? He was so happy he asked me to sit with him a while in his room and...
You've seen his room?
I asked, shocked.
Yes, haven't you?
My silence was all the answer she needed.
Oh,
she said awkwardly, Well, you're not missing anything. It's dark and there's a gun rack. And then he has this mess of pictures on the wall. It's nothing special, she promised, waving it away. Anyway, after that, he started visiting me during pretty much every free moment he had. She shook her head. It happened kind of fast. I sighed. He basically told me, I confessed. He made a little comment about needing us both here. So, she bit her lip, you're pretty sure he still likes you? Hadn't she already suspected that? Did she simply need me to confirm it? Chris, do you really want to hear all this? Yes, I want to know where I stand. And I'll tell you anything you want to know, too. We aren't running this thing, but that doesn't mean we have to be lost in it. I walked in a short circle, trying to make sense of everything. I wasn't sure I was brave enough to ask Maxon about Chris. I could barely talk honestly with him about me. But I kept feeling like I was missing pieces of the truth about where I stood. Maybe this was my only hope of really knowing. I'm pretty sure he wants me to stay around for a while. But I think he wants you here, too. She nodded. I figured. Has he kissed you? I blurted out. She smiled bashfully. No, but I think that he would have if I hadn't asked him not to. In my family, we sort of have this tradition where we don't kiss until we're engaged. Sometimes we have a party when people announce their wedding date, and everyone gets to see the first kiss. I want that from me. But he tried to? No, I explained before we got that far. He kisses my hands a lot, though, or sometimes my cheek. I think it's kind of sweet, she gushed. I nodded, looking at the grass. Wait, she said, hesitating. Did he kiss you? Part of me wanted to brag that I was his first kiss ever, that when we kissed it felt like time stopped. Sort of. It's kind of hard to explain. I hedged. She made a face. No, it's not. Has he or hasn't he? It's complicated. America, if you're not going to be honest, then this is a waste of time. I came here wanting to be open with you. I thought it would benefit us both to be friendly. I stood there wringing my hands, trying to think of a way to explain myself. It wasn't that I disliked Chris. If I went home, I'd want her to win. I do want to be friends with you, Chris. I kind of thought we already were. Me too, she said gently. It's just hard for me to share private things. And I appreciate your honesty, but I'm not sure I want to know everything. Even though I asked, I said quickly, seeing the words coming to her lips. I already knew he had feelings for you. I could see it. I think I need things to be vague for the time being. She smiled. I can respect that. Would you do me a favor, though? Sure, if I can. She bit her lip and turned her eyes away for a minute. When she looked back, I could see the hint of tears in her eyes. If you're certain that he doesn't want me, could you maybe warn me? I don't know how you feel, but I love him, and I'd appreciate being told, if you know for sure anyway. She loved him. She'd said it out loud, fearlessly. Chris loved Maxon. If he ever told me for sure, I would tell you. She nodded. And maybe we could make another promise, not to purposely get in each other's way. I don't want to win that way, and I don't think you do either. I'm no Celeste, I said with disgust, and she laughed. I promise to be fair. Okay, then. She dabbed at her eyes and straightened her dress. I could see how easily, how elegant she would look with the crown on her head. I need to go, I lied. Thanks for talking to me. Thanks for coming. I'm sorry if I was too intrusive. It's fine. I stepped away. I'll see you later. Okay. I turned as quickly as I could without being rude and made my way to the palace. Once inside, I quickened my pace and bolted up the stairs, aching to hide. I made my way to the second floor and headed toward my room. I noticed a piece of paper on the floor, which was unusual for the typically immaculate palace. It was by the corner leading to my door, so I guessed it might be for me. To be sure, I flipped it over and read. Another rebel attack this morning, this time in Paloma. Current count is over 300 dead, at least 100 more wounded. Again, the main demand appears to be terminating this election, calling for an end to the royal line. Please advise on best response. My body went cold. I scanned both sides of the paper, looking for a date. Another attack this morning? Even if this was a few days old, it was at least the second one. And the demand was again ending this election. Was this what the recent attacks had been about? Were they trying to get rid of us? If so, were both the northern and southern rebels pursuing that end? I didn't know what to do. I wasn't supposed to have seen this message, so it wasn't like I could talk to anyone. But did the people who were supposed to know already have this information? I decided to put the paper back on the ground. Hopefully a guard would come around soon and get it to the right place. For now, I would just be optimistic that someone was responding. Chapter 24. I took all my meals in my room for the next 2 days, managing to avoid Gris until dinner on Wednesday. I thought I wouldn't feel so awkward by then. I was sadly mistaken. We gave each other quiet smiles, but I couldn't bring myself to speak. I almost wished I was across the room, sitting between Celeste and Elise. Almost. Just before dessert was served, Sylvia came sprinting in, as fast as her heeled shoes could carry her. Her curtsy was particularly brief before she made her way to the Queen and whispered something to her. The Queen gasped and ran with Sylvia out of the room, leaving us alone. We'd been taught never to raise our voices, but in the moment we couldn't help ourselves.
"Does anyone know what's going on?" Celeste called, abnormally concerned.
"You don't think they're hurt, do you?" Elise said.
"Oh, no," Chris breathed and put her head down on the table.
"It's okay, Chris, have some pie," Natalie offered.
I found myself speechless, afraid even to think about what this could mean.
"What if they were captured?" Chris worried aloud. "I don't think the new Asians would do that," Elise said, though I could see she was worried.
I wasn't sure if her concern was strictly for Max's safety, or because any aggression on the part of the people she had a connection with would ruin her chances.
"What if their plane went down?" Celeste said quietly.
She looked up, and I was surprised to see genuine fear on her face. It was enough to silence us all. What if Maxon was dead? Queen Amberley returned with Sylvia in tow, and we all watched her eagerly. To our intense relief, she was beaming.
"Good news, ladies. The king and prince will be home tonight," she sang.
Natalie clapped, as Chris and I simultaneously fell back into our chairs. I hadn't realized how tense my body was for those few minutes. Sylvia chimed in.
"Since they've had such an intense few days, we've decided to forego any big celebration. Depending on when they leave New Asia, we might not even see them before bedtime."
"Thank you, Sylvia," the queen said patiently.
Really, who cared?
"Forgive me, ladies, but I have some work to do. Please enjoy your desserts and have a lovely night," she said, then turned and flew out the door. Chris left seconds later. Maybe she was making a welcome home card. After that, I ate quickly and made my way back upstairs. As I was walking down the hall toward my room, I saw a little flash of blonde hair under a white cap and the fluttering black skirt of a maid's uniform running toward the far side stairs. It was Lucy, and it sounded like she was crying. She seemed so determined to get away unnoticed that I decided not to call out after her. Rounding the corner to my room, I saw that my door was wide open. Without it to block their voices, Anne and Mary's argument spilled into the hallway, where I overheard everything.
"Why you always have to be so hard on her?" Mary complained.
"What was I supposed to tell her? That she can have whatever she wants?" Anne shot back.
"Yes. What would the harm be in simply saying you had faith in her?"
What was going on? Was this why they had all seemed so distant lately?
"She aims too high," Anne accused. "It would be unkind of me to give her false hope."
Mary's voice bled with sarcasm.
"Oh, and everything you told her was so kind. You're just bitter," she accused.
"What?" Anne lashed back.
"You're bitter. You can't stand that she might be closer to something you want than you are, Mary yelled. You've always looked down on Lucy because she wasn't raised at the palace as long as you were, and you've been jealous of me because I was born here. Why can't you be happy with who you are instead of stepping on her to make yourself feel better? That's not what I was trying to do, Anne said, her voice breaking. The tight sobs were enough to silence Mary. It would have stopped me, too. Anne crying seemed like an impossibility. Is it so bad that I want more than this? She asked, her voice thick with tears. I understand that my position is an honor, and I'm glad to do my job, but I don't want to do this for the rest of my life. I want more. I want a husband. I want...
She was finally overcome by her sadness. My heart broke into 1,000 pieces. The only way for Anne to get out of this job was to marry her way out. And it wasn't like a slew of 3s or 4s were going to parade down the palace halls, looking for a maid to take as a wife. She really was stuck. I sighed, steadied myself, and entered the room.
Lady America, Mary said with a curtsy, and Anne followed.
Out of the corner of my eye, I saw her feverishly mopping the tears off her face. Given her pride, I didn't think acknowledging them was a good thing, so I strode past the both of them to the mirror.
How are you? Mary continued.
Really tired. I think I'll be going to bed right away, I said, focusing on the pins in my hair.
You know what? Why don't you both go relax? I can take care of myself. Are you sure, miss? Anne asked, trying so hard to keep her voice composed.
Very. I'll see you all tomorrow. They didn't need any more encouragement than that, and thank goodness. I didn't want them to take care of me right now, any more than they probably felt like it. Once I managed to get out of my dress, I lay in bed for a long time, thinking of Maxon. I wasn't even sure exactly what I was thinking about him. It was all slightly vague and unfixed, but I kept flashing back to my overwhelming happiness when I found out he was safe and on his way back. And there was a corner of my mind that wondered if he'd thought about me at all while he was gone. I tossed for hours, completely unsettled. At about 1 in the morning, I figured that if I couldn't sleep, I might as well read. I turned on the lamp and pulled out Gregory's diary. I skipped past the fall entries and picked one from February. Sometimes I almost have to laugh at how simple this has been. If there was ever a textbook written on the topic of overthrowing countries, I would be the star of it. Or I could probably write it myself. I'm not sure what I'd say step 1 was, as you can't really force another country to try and invade or put idiots in charge of what already exists, but I certainly would encourage any other would-be leaders to acquire ungodly amounts of money by any means necessary. A fascination with money wouldn't be enough, however. You must possess it and be in a position to lord it over others. My lack of background in politics hasn't been an issue in gaining allegiance. In fact, I would say avoiding that sector altogether may be one of my greatest strengths. No one trusts politicians, and why would they? Wallace has been making empty promises for years in the hopes that one of them might come through, and there isn't a chance in hell any of them could. I, on the other hand, offer the idea of more. No guarantees, merely that faint glimmer of optimism that change might come. It doesn't even matter at this point what the change might be. They're so desperate they don't care. They don't even think to ask. Perhaps the key is staying calm while others panic. Wallace is so hated now he's all but handed the presidency over to me, and not a soul is complaining. I say nothing, do nothing, and wear a pleasant smile as everyone around me sinks into hysterics. One glance at that coward next to me, and there's no denying I look better at a podium or shaking a prime minister's hand. And Wallace is so desperate to have someone the people love on his side, I'm pretty sure it will only take 2 or 3 inconspicuously worded deals to have me running everything. This country is mine. I feel like a boy with a chess set playing a game he knows he will win.
I'm smarter, richer, and far more qualified in the eyes of a country that adores me for reasons no one can seem to name. By the time someone thinks to consider it, it won't matter anymore. I can do what I like, and there's no one left to stop me. So, what's next? I feel it's time to collapse the system. This pitiful republic is already in shambles and barely works. The real question is, who do I align myself with? How do I make this something the republic begs for? I have one idea. My daughter won't like it, but I'm not really concerned with that. It's about time she made herself useful. I slammed the book shut, confused and frustrated. Was I missing something? Collapsing what system? Lording over people? Was the structure of our country not a necessity, but a convenience? I considered hunting through the book for what happened to his daughter, but I was already so disoriented, I decided against it. Instead, I went to the balcony, hoping some fresh air would help me wrap my mind around the words I just read. I looked to the sky, trying to process all this, but I didn't even know where to start. I sighed, and my eyes wandered the gardens, stopping on a flicker of white. Maxon was walking alone on the grounds. He was finally home. His shirt was untucked, and he wasn't wearing a coat or tie. What was he doing out so late? I saw that he was holding one of his cameras. He must have been having a rough night himself. I hesitated a moment, but who else could I talk to about this?
Psst!
He jerked his head around, looking for the source. I did it again, waving my arms until he saw me. A surprised smile flashed across his face as he waved back. Hoping he'd be able to see it, I pulled on my ear. He did the same. I pointed to him, then to my room. He nodded, holding up a finger to tell me it'd be a minute. I nodded back and went inside as he did the same. I put on my robe and ran my fingers through my hair, wanting to look half as put together as he did. I wasn't sure exactly how to talk about this, because I was essentially about to ask Maxon if he knew he was sitting on top of something that was much less altruistic than the public had been led to believe. Just as I was starting to wonder what was taking him so long, he knocked on the door. I rushed over to open it and was greeted by the lens of his camera. It clicked a still of my shocked smile. My expression dissolved into something that expressed how unamused I was by this little stunt, and he captured that, too, laughing. "You're ridiculous. Get in here," I ordered, grabbing him by the arm. He followed.
"Sorry, I couldn't resist."
"You took your time," I accused, settling on the edge of the bed. He came to sit beside me, far enough away that we could face each other.
"I had to stop by my room."
He placed his camera safely on my bedside table, flicking at my jar with a penny in it. He made a sound that was almost a laugh and turned back to me, not explaining his detour. "Oh, so how was your trip?"
"Odd," he confessed. "We ended up going to the rural part of New Asia. Father said it was some local dispute, but by the time we got there, everything was fine."
He shook his head.
"Honestly, it made no sense. We spent a few days walking through old cities and trying to speak to the natives. Father is quite disappointed with my grasp of the language and is insisting I study more. As if I'm not doing enough these days," he said with a sigh.
"That is kind of strange."
"I'm guessing it was some sort of test. He's been throwing them at me randomly lately, and I don't always know they're happening. Maybe this was about decision-making or dealing with the unexpected. I'm not sure." He shrugged his shoulders. "Either way, I'm sure I failed."
He fidgeted with his hands for a minute.
"He also really wanted to talk about the selection. I think he felt like distance would do me good, give me perspective or something. Honestly, I'm tired of everyone else talking about a decision that I'm supposed to make."
I was sure the king's idea of perspective meant getting me out of Maxon's head. I'd seen the way he smiled at the other girls at meals or nodded to them in the hallways. He never did that to me. I felt instantly uncomfortable and didn't know what to say. It appeared Maxon didn't either. I decided I couldn't ask him about the diary yet,
He seemed so humble about these things, the way he led, the kind of king he wanted to be, that I couldn't demand answers from him that I wasn't anywhere close to sure he had. A corner of my brain couldn't shake the worry that he knew more than he'd ever shared, but I needed to know more myself before I spoke. Maxon cleared his throat and pulled a little string of beads out of his pocket.
As I said, we were walking through a bunch of towns, and I saw this in an old woman's street shop. It's blue, he added, pointing out the obvious. You seem to like blue.
I love blue, I whispered. I looked at the little bracelet. A few days ago, Maxon was walking on the other side of the world, and he saw this in a shop, and it made him think of me.
I didn't find anything for anyone else, so maybe you could keep this between us?
I nodded my head in agreement.
You never were the type to brag, he mumbled.
I couldn't stop staring at the bracelet. It was so understated, with polished stones that weren't quite gems. I reached out and ran a finger over one of the oval-shaped beads, and Maxon wiggled the bracelet in his hand, which made me laugh.
Do you want me to put it on?
He offered. I nodded and stretched out the wrist that didn't have Aspen's button on it. Maxon placed the cool stones against my skin and tied the little ribbon that held them together.
Lovely, he said.
And there it was, pushing up through all the worries. Hope. It lifted the heavy parts of my heart and made me miss him. I wanted to erase everything since Halloween, go back to that night, and hold on to those two people on the dance floor. And then, at the same time, it made my heart plummet. If we were back at Halloween, I wouldn't have a reason to doubt this gift. Even if I let myself be everything my father said I was, everything Aspen said I wasn't, I couldn't be Chris. Chris was better. I was so tired and stressed and confused, I started crying.
America?
He asked hesitantly.
What's wrong?
I don't understand.
What don't you understand?
He asked quietly. I mentally noted that he was doing much better around crying girls these days. You, I admitted. I'm just really confused about you right now. I wiped away a tear on one side of my face, and so gently, Maxon's hand moved to wipe the tears on the other. In a way, it was strange to have him touch me like that again. At the same time, it was so familiar that it would have seemed wrong if he hadn't. Once the tears were gone, he left his hand there, cupping my face.
America, he said earnestly, if you ever want to know anything about me, what matters to me or who I am, all you need to do is ask.
He looked so sincere that I nearly did ask. I almost begged him to tell me everything, if he'd always considered Chris, if he knew about the diaries, what it was about this perfect little bracelet that made him think of me. But how did I know it would be the truth? And because I was slowly realizing he was the steadier choice, what about Aspen? I don't know if I'm ready to do that yet. After a moment of thought, Maxon looked at me.
I understand. I think I do anyway. But we should talk about some serious things very soon. And when you're ready, I'm here.
He didn't press me. Instead, he stood, giving me a small bow, before grabbing his camera and making his way to the door. He looked back at me one last time before disappearing into the hall, and I was surprised by how much I ached to see him go. Chapter 25
Private lessons? Sylvia asked. As in several a week?
Absolutely, I replied. For the first time since I arrived, I was truly grateful for Sylvia. I knew that there was no way she'd be able to resist having someone willing to hang on her every word. And if she was making me do extra work, it meant I could keep myself busy. Thinking about Maxon and Aspen and the diary and the girls was too much right now. Protocol was black and white. The steps for proposing a law were orderly. These were things I could master. Sylvia looked at me, still slightly stunned, before she broke into a huge smile. Embracing me, she cried out, "Oh, this will be wonderful! Finally, one of you understands how important this is!"
She held me at arm's length.
When do you want to start?
Now? She was bursting with delight.
Let me go get some books.
I dove into her studies, so grateful for the words and facts and statistics she crammed into my head. If I wasn't with Sylvia, I was reading up on something she'd assigned me as I spent countless hours in the women's room, all but tuning out the other girls. I worked, and I was excited about the next time the five of us had a joint class. When that time came, Sylvia started by asking us what we were passionate about. I scribbled down my family, music, and then, as if the word demanded to be written, justice.
The reason I ask is because the Queen is typically in charge of a committee of some kind, something that benefits the country. Queen Amberlee, for example, began a program for training families to take care of their mentally and physically infirmed members. So many get deposited in the streets once the families can no longer deal with them, and the amount of AIDS grows to an unmanageable number. The statistics over the last 10 years have proven that her program has helped keep the numbers lower, thus keeping the general population safer.
Are we supposed to come up with a program like that? Elise asked, sounding nervous.
Yes, that will be your new project, Sylvia said. On the Capitol report in 2 weeks' time, you'll be asked to present your idea and propose how you might start it.
Natalie made a little squeak of a sound, and Celeste rolled her eyes. Chris looked like she was already dreaming something up. Her instant enthusiasm made me nervous. I remembered Maxon talking about an upcoming elimination. I felt like Chris and I were at a slight advantage, but still.
Is this really helpful? Celeste asked. I'd rather learn about something we'll actually use.
I could tell that beneath her concerned tone, she was either bored with this idea already or intimidated by it. Sylvia looked appalled.
You will use this. Whoever becomes the new princess will be in charge of a philanthropy project.
Celeste muttered something under her breath and started fiddling with a pen. I hated that she wanted the position with none of the responsibility. I'd make a better princess than she would, I thought, and in that moment I realized there was some truth to that. I didn't have her connections or Chris's poise, but at least I cared. And wasn't that worth something? For the first time in a while, I felt a true shot of enthusiasm course through me. Here was a project that would allow me to show off the one thing that separated me from the others. I was determined to pour myself into this, and hopefully produce something that might genuinely make a difference. Maybe I'd still lose in the long run. Maybe I wouldn't even want to win. But I would be as close to a princess as I possibly could, and I would make my peace with the selection. It was hopeless. Try as I might, I couldn't come up with a single idea for my philanthropy project. I thought and read and thought some more. I asked my maids, but they had no ideas. I would have sought out Aspen, but I hadn't heard from him in days. I guessed he was being extra cautious with Maxon home. What was worse was that Chris was clearly deep into her presentation. She skipped hours of time in the women's room to go read, and when she was present, she had her nose in a book or was scribbling notes furiously. Damn. When Friday came, I felt like dying, as I suddenly realized I only had a week left and no prospects on the horizon. During the report, Gavril set up the structure for the next show, explaining that there would be a few brief announcements, and then the rest of the evening would be dedicated to our presentations. A light sweat broke out on my forehead. I caught Maxon looking at me. He reached up and tugged his ear, and I wasn't sure what to do. I didn't quite want to say yes, but I didn't want to just brush him off. I pulled on my ear, and he looked relieved. I fidgeted while I waited for him to show up, twiddling the ends of my hair and pacing around my room. Maxon's knock was brief before he let himself in the way he used to. I stood, feeling I needed to be a bit more formal than usual. I could tell that I was being ridiculous, but I felt completely unable to stop it at the same time. How are you? He asked, crossing the room.
Honestly, nervous.
It's because I'm so good-looking, isn't it? I laughed at the sympathetic face he made. I should avert my eyes, I said, playing along. Actually,
It's mostly about that philanthropy project.
Oh, he said, sitting at my table. You could run your presentation by me if you like. Chris did.
I felt deflated. Of course she was done. I don't even have an idea yet, I confessed, sitting across from him.
Yes, I can see how that would be stressful.
I gave him a look as if to say he had no idea.
What's important to you? There has to be something that really touches you that the others might miss.
Maxon leaned back in the chair comfortably, one hand on the table. How was he so at ease? Couldn't he see how on edge I was? I've been thinking all week and nothing's come to mind.
He laughed quietly. I would have thought that you'd have the easiest time. You've seen more hardships in your life than the other four combined.
Exactly. But I've never known how to change any of it. That's the problem. I stared at the table, remembering Carolina with perfect clarity. I can see it all. The sevens who get injured doing their labor-heavy jobs and are suddenly downgraded to eights because they can't work anymore. The girls who walk the streets on the edge of curfew, wandering into the beds of lonely men for practically anything. The kids who never have enough food, enough heat, enough love, because their parents are working themselves to death. I can remember my worst days like they're nothing. But coming up with a feasible way to do anything about it? I shook my head. What could I possibly say? I looked at him, hoping there was an answer in his eyes. There wasn't.
You make an excellent point.
Then he was quiet. I thought over everything I said, as well as his response. Did it mean that he knew more about Gregory's plans than I thought? Or did it mean he felt guilty because he had so much when others had so little? He sighed.
This really wasn't what I was hoping we'd talk about tonight.
What did you have on your mind? Maxon looked up at me as if I must be crazy.
You, of course.
I tucked my hair behind my ear. What about me, exactly? He changed positions, angling his chair so we were a bit closer and leaning in as if this was a secret.
I thought that after you saw that Marley was fine, things would change. I was sure you'd find a way to care about me again. But that hasn't happened. Even tonight you agreed to see me, but everything about you is standoffish.
So he did notice. I ran my fingers across the table, not looking him in the eyes. It's not exactly you I have a problem with. It's the position. I shrugged. I thought you knew that.
But after Marley...
My head popped up. After Marley, things kept happening. I'll have a grasp on what being a princess will mean one minute and lose it the next. I'm not like the other girls. I'm the lowest caste here, and Elise might have been a four, but her family is way different from most fours. They own so much I'm surprised they haven't bought their way up yet. And you were raised in this. It's a serious change for me. He nodded, his endless patience still there.
I do understand that, America. That's part of why I wanted you to have time. But you need to consider me in this, too.
I am.
No, not like that. Not like I'm part of the equation. Consider my predicament. I don't have much time left. This philanthropy project will be the springboard for another elimination. Surely you've guessed that.
I lowered my head. Of course I had.
So what am I to do once it's down to four? Give you more time? When it gets to three, I'm supposed to choose. If there are only three of you and you're still debating if you want the responsibility, if you want the workload, if you want me, what am I supposed to do then?
I bit my lip. I don't know. Maxon shook his head.
That's not acceptable. I need an answer. Because I can't send someone who really wants this, who wants me, home, if you're going to bail out in the end.
My breathing picked up. So I have to give you an answer now? I don't even know what I'm giving an answer to. Does saying I want to stay mean saying I want to be the one? Because I don't know that. I felt my muscles tensing, like they were preparing to run.
You don't have to say anything now, but by the report, you need to know if you want this or not. I don't like giving you an ultimatum, but you're being a bit careless with my one shot. He sighed before continuing. That wasn't where I wanted this conversation to go either. Maybe I should leave.
I could hear in his voice that he wanted me to ask him to stay, to tell him this was all going to work itself out.
I think you should, I whispered.
He shook his head, irritated, and stood. Fine. He walked across the room in quick, angry strides. I'll just go see what Chris is doing.
Chapter 26. I went down for breakfast on the late side. I didn't want to risk running into Maxon or any of the girls alone. Before I made it to the stairs, Aspen came walking up the hall. I made an exasperated sound, and he looked around before approaching me.
Where have you been? I quietly demanded. Working, Mayor. I'm a guard. I can't control when and where they schedule me. I've stopped being placed on the round for your room.
I wanted to ask why, but this wasn't the time. I need to talk to you. He thought for a moment.
At 2, go to the end of the first floor hallway, down past the hospital wing. I can be there, but not for long.
I nodded. He gave me a quick bow and went on his way before anyone noticed our conversation, and I continued downstairs, not feeling satisfied at all. I wanted to scream. Saturday being a day-long sentence to the women's room was really unfair. When people came to visit, they wanted to see the queen, not us. When one of us was princess, that would probably change. But for now, I was stuck watching Chris pore over her presentation again. The others were reading things too, notes or reports, and I felt sick to my stomach. I needed an idea, and fast. I was sure Aspen would help me figure this out, and I had to start something tonight no matter what. As if she could read my thoughts, Sylvia, who had been visiting with the queen, stopped by to see me. How's my star pupil? She asked, keeping her voice low enough that the others wouldn't notice.
Great. How is your project going? Do you need any help fine-tuning? She offered.
Fine-tuning? How was I supposed to tweak nothing?
It's going great. You're going to love it, I'm sure. I lied.
She cocked her head to the side.
Being a bit secretive, are we?
A bit. I smiled.
That's fine. You've been doing wonderful work lately. I'm sure it'll be fantastic.
Sylvia patted my shoulder as she headed out of the room. I was in so much trouble. The minutes passed so slowly that it was like a special kind of torture. Just before 2, I excused myself and went down the hallway. At the very end, there was a burgundy upholstered couch underneath a massive window. I sat to wait. I didn't see a clock, but the minutes passed too slowly for comfort. Finally, Aspen came around a corner.
About time, I sighed.
What's wrong?
He asked, standing by the couch, looking official.
So much, I thought. So many things I can't talk to you about. We have this assignment, and I don't know what to do. I can't think of anything, and I'm stressed, and I can't sleep, I said spastically.
He chuckled. What's the assignment, Tiara designing?
No, I said, shooting him a frustrated glare. We have to come up with a project, something good for the country, like Queen Amberlee's work with the disabled.
This is what you've been worked up about? He asked, shaking his head. How is that stressful? That sounds like fun.
I thought it would be too, but I can't come up with anything. What would you do?
Aspen thought for a moment.
I know. You should do a caste exchange program, he said, his eyes glittering with excitement.
A what?
A caste exchange program. People from the upper castes switch places with people from the lower castes so they can know what it feels like to walk in our shoes.
I don't think that would work, Aspen. At least not for this project.
It's a great idea, he insisted. Can you imagine someone like Celeste breaking her nails stocking shelves? It'd serve them right.
What's gotten into you? Aren't some of the guards natural twos? Aren't they your friends now?
Nothing's gotten into me, he answered defensively. I'm the same as ever. You're the one who's forgotten what it was like to live in a house with no heat.
I straightened my back.
I haven't forgotten. I'm trying to come up with a service project to stop things like that. Even if I go home, someone might use my idea, so I need it to be good. I want to help people.
Don't forget, Mayor, Aspen implored me with a quiet passion in his eyes. This government sat by while you went without food. They let my brother get beaten in the square. All the talk in the world won't undo what we are. They put us in a corner we could never get out of on our own, and they're not in a rush to pull us out, Mayor. They just don't get it. I huffed and stood. Where are you going? He asked.
Back to the women's room, I answered, starting to move.
Aspen followed. Are we seriously fighting over some stupid project?
I turned on him. No, we're fighting because you don't get it either. I'm a 3 now, and you're a 2. Instead of being bitter about what we were handed, why can't you see the chance you have? You can change your family's life. You could probably change lots of lives. And all you want to do is settle the score. That's not going to get anyone anywhere.
Aspen didn't say anything, and I left. I tried not to be upset with him for being passionate about what he wanted. If anything, wasn't that an admirable quality? But it made me think so much about the castes and how they couldn't be undone that I started getting angry about the situation. Nothing was going to change it, so why bother? I played my violin, I took a bath, I tried to nap. I spent part of the evening sitting in a quiet room. I sat on my balcony. None of it mattered. It was getting dangerously late in the game, and I still had nothing for my project. I lay in bed for hours trying to sleep and not getting far with that either. I kept flashing back to Aspen's angry words, his constant struggle with his lot in life. I thought about Maxon and his ultimatum, his demand for me to commit. And then I wondered if any of this mattered anyway, since I was certainly going home as soon as I showed up Friday night, without anything to present. I sighed and pulled back my blankets. I'd been avoiding looking at Gregory's diary again. I was worried that it would give me more questions than answers. But maybe something in there would give me direction, something I could talk about on the report. Besides, even if I couldn't help myself, I had to know what happened to his daughter. I was pretty sure her name was Catherine, so I flipped through the book, looking for any mention of her, ignoring everything else, until I found a picture of a girl standing next to a man who appeared to be much older. Maybe it was just my imagination, but she looked like she'd been crying. Catherine was finally married today to Emil de Montpezat of Swendway. She sobbed the whole way to the church, until I made it clear that if she didn't straighten up for the ceremony, there'd be hell to pay afterward. Her mother isn't happy, and I suspect Spencer is upset, now that he's aware of how little his sister wanted to go through with this. But Spencer is bright. I think he'll fall into line quickly once he sees all the possibilities I've created for him. And Damon is so supportive, I wish I could take whatever it is in his system and inject it into the rest of the population. There's something to be said for the young. It's Spencer and Damon's generation that has been the most helpful in getting me where I am. Their enthusiasm is unswayable, and they are a far more popular crowd for others to listen to than the feeble elderly who insist we've gone down the wrong path. I keep wondering if there's a way to silence them for good that wouldn't mire my name. Either way, we are slated to have the coronation tomorrow. Now that Swendway has gotten a powerful ally of the North American Union, I can have what I want, a crown. I think this is a fair trade. Why settle for President Ilya when I can be King Ilya instead? Through my daughter, I've been deemed royal. Everything is in place. After tomorrow, there will be no turning back.
He sold her. The pig sold his daughter to a man she hated so he could have everything he wanted. My instinct was to close the book again, to shut it all out. But I forced myself to flip through it, reading passages at random. In one place, a rough diagram of the caste system was laid out, originally dreamed up with 6 tiers instead of 8.
On another page, he plotted to change people's last names to separate them from their pasts. One line made it clear that he intended to punish his enemies by placing them lower on the scale and reward the loyal by placing them higher. I wondered if my great-grandparents simply had nothing to offer, or if they had resisted this. I hoped it was the latter. What should my last name have been? Did Dad know? My whole life I'd been led to believe that Gregory Ilya was a hero, the person who saved our country when we were on the edge of oblivion. Clearly, he was nothing more than a power-hungry monster. What kind of man manipulated people so willingly? What kind of man hawked his daughter for his own convenience? I looked at the older entries I'd read in a new light. He never said he wanted to be a great family man, he just wanted to look like one. He would play by Wallace's rules for now. He was using his son's peers to gain support. He was playing a game from the very beginning. I felt nauseated. I stood and paced the floor, trying to wrap my head around it all. How had an entire history been forgotten? How was it that no one ever spoke of the old countries? Where was all this information? Why didn't anyone know? I opened my eyes and looked to the sky. It seemed impossible. Surely someone would have disapproved, would have told their children the truth. But then again, maybe they had. I'd often wondered why Dad never let me talk about the time-worn history book he had hidden in his room. Why the history I did know about Ilya was never in print. Maybe it was because if it was there in writing that Ilya was a hero, people would have rioted. But if it was always a point of speculation, where one person insisted it was a certain way and another denied it, how would anyone ever hold on to the truth? I wondered if Maxon knew. Suddenly a memory came to me. Not so long ago, Maxon and I had our first kiss. It was so unexpected that I had pulled away, leaving him embarrassed. Then when I realized that I wanted Maxon to kiss me, I suggested that we simply erase that memory and plant a new one. America, he'd said, I don't think you can change history. To which I replied, sure we can. Besides, who'd ever know about it but you and me? I'd meant it as a joke. Surely if he and I end up together, we'd remember what really happened, no matter how silly it was. We'd never actually replace it with a more perfect-sounding story, simply for the sake of show. But the whole selection was a show. If Maxon and I were ever asked about our first kiss, would we tell anyone the truth? Or would we keep that little detail a secret between the two of us? When we died, no one would know, and that fraction of a moment that was so important to who we were would be gone. Could it be that simple? Tell one story to one generation and repeat it until it was accepted as fact. How often had I asked someone older than Mom or Dad what they knew or what their parents had seen? They were old. What did they know? It was so arrogant of me to discount them completely. I felt so stupid. But the important issue wasn't how this all made me feel. The important issue was what I was going to do with it. I'd lived my whole life stuck in a hole in our society, and because I loved music, I didn't complain. But I had wanted to be with Aspen, and because he was a six, it was harder than it had to be. If Gregory Ilya hadn't coldly designed the laws of our country, sitting comfortably at his desk all those years ago, then Aspen and I wouldn't have fought, and I never would have cared about Maxon. Maxon wouldn't even be a prince. Marley's hands would still be intact, and she and Carter wouldn't be living in a room barely big enough for their bed. Jared, my sweet baby brother, could study all the science he wanted, instead of pushing himself into the arts for which he had no passion. By obtaining a comfy life in a beautiful house, Gregory Ilya had robbed most of the country of its ability to ever attempt to have the very same thing. Maxon said if I wanted to know who he was, all I had to do was ask. I'd been afraid to face the possibility of him being this person. But I had to know. If I was meant to make a decision about being a part of the selection or going home, I needed to know exactly what he was made of. Donning my slippers and robe, I left my room, passing the nameless guard on my way.
You all right, miss?
He asked. Yes, I'll be back soon. He looked like he wanted to say more, but I left too quickly for him to speak. I headed up the stairs to the